Welcome to Celebrate Poe. My name is George Bartley, and this is episode 237, Like Taylor Swift. Today I hope to finish, for now, a look at how Edgar Allan Poe was influenced by the works of William Shakespeare. Now, there's no question that the young Edgar Poe at Stoke Newington Boarding School in England would have been quite immersed in Shakespeare. He would have been exposed to Shakespeare's use of rhetorical devices. For example, parallelism. With parallelism, the speaker or writer uses two often contrasting statements to communicate an idea. So it's kind of a balance. One statement on one hand and one statement on the other. An example of parallelism in Shakespeare's Hamlet would be to be or not to be. Basically, to live or to die. A modern example of parallelism might be John F. Kennedy's "Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country." Poe used quite a few rhetorical devices throughout his works. In fact, the only two writers I know of who have book-length studies of their use of rhetorical devices are Shakespeare in Shakespeare and His Use of Language by Sister Miriam Joseph and Poe, Rhetoric and Style by Brett Zimmerman. Now, I believe in the very first episode of Celebrate Poe, I mentioned that I was living in Richmond when I applied for what I thought would be my dream job, working at the Apple Store. A few weeks later, I got a letter from the store saying that they had decided on someone else, that I did not appear to have the qualities of a salesperson. And looking back, I can see that they were quite right. I would have been a terrible salesperson. But my husband told me about an opening at the Edgar Allan Poe Museum in Richmond, and I applied. For some reason, they had this thing about advertising Poe as America's Shakespeare at the time. And I had just graduated with a master's degree in Shakespearean education from the American Shakespeare Center. In fact, I was hired right on the spot. I think I must have really made an impression. But in reality, I think they must have needed someone right away. After the interview, the director of the Poe Museum, a great guy by the name of Chris Semter, started showing me around, pointing out some of the many original books and documents that the museum had in its collection. And when I mean original, I mean words and writings in Poe's own handwriting. But getting back to Edgar Poe as a youth, it's believed that in his 20s, he started carrying a list of passages from Shakespeare that must have especially impressed him. Chris showed me that list, a list that Poe had jotted down, and I got a strange feeling. I mean, here I was looking at Poe's actual handwriting while in his 20s. A paper where he listed passages from Shakespeare that really impressed him. I mentioned in the last episode that I must have felt like an awestruck teenage girl seeing her first Taylor Swift concert, except that I did not have a cell phone with me. It's said that while Poe was influenced by Shakespeare's words and mastery of literary expression, Edgar Allan Poe came to believe that a piece of literature should be short enough to be read at one sitting. An example today, and I don't know how this will work, but an example might be a movie where the viewer usually takes in the whole work without interruption. Whereas a programmer series on Netflix, you might watch the programmer series and take constant breaks. Poe felt that a work should be read at one sitting for maximum effect. To me, that's one reason that works like The Telltale Heart are so scary. With The Telltale Heart, for example, the entire work can be read in less than 10 minutes. Even a spoken version takes less than 12 minutes. Now, the list that Poe saw was certainly too long to be read in its entirety. But I'd like to take a few of my favorite plays by Shakespeare and read some of those brief passages that Poe wrote on his list. And I must admit that it was almost like Edgar Allan Poe was speaking directly to me in his southern drawl, an extremely eerie feeling. The Tempest. The very rats instinctively had quit it. Nothing of him that doth fade but doth suffer a sea change into something rich and strange. Ah, but he's something stained with grief that's beauty's canker. Thou mightest call him a goodly person. May most sure the goddess on whom these heirs attend. Look, he's winding up the watch of his wits, and by it will strike. But these sweet thoughts do even refresh my labors, more busyless when I do it. I do beseech you, chiefly that I may sell it or set it in my prayers. What is your name? Every third thought shall be my grave. Yet writers say, as in the sweetest bud, the eating canker dwells, so eating love inhabits in the finest wills of all. Twelfth Night. He plays on the viol da gambo and speaks three or four languages word for word without book, and hath all the good gifts of nature. It shall become thee well to act my woes, and these that are foods, let them use their talents. Two faults, Madonna, that drink and counsel will amend. Misprison in the highest degree. I think his soul is in hell, Madonna. I know his soul is in heaven full. Lady, you are the cruelest she alive, if you will lead these graces to the grave and leave the world no copy. I see what you are. You are too proud, but if you were the devil, you are fair. I am a gentleman. I'll be sworn thou art Antonio, but let me know of you whether you are bound, Sebastian. No sooth, sir. My determinate voyage is mere extravagancy. Poor lady, she were better love a dream. Do not our loves consist of the four elements? In faith, so they say, but I think it rather consists of eating and drinking. Oh, what a deal of scorn looks beautiful in the contempt and anger of his lip. I pray you let us satisfy our eyes with the memorials and the things of fame that do renown this city. There comes the Countess. Now heaven walks on earth. More than I love these eyes, more than my life, more by all mores than e'er I shall love wife. A contract of eternal bond of love, a test by the holy close of lips. Since when my watch hath told me towards my grave, I have traveled but 2 hours. We took him for a coward, but he's the very devil incarnate. Pardon me, sweet one, even for the vows we made each other, yet so late ago, one face, one voice, one habit, and 2 persons. What countryman, what name, what parentage? But we do learn his givings out were of an infinite distance from his true meant design. Measure for measure. Falling in the flames of her own youth, let's write good angel on the devil's horn. And he had been a dog that should have howled thus. They would have hanged him. And now from much ado about nothing. Oh, what me may do, what men dare do, what men daily do, not knowing what they do. The idea of her life shall sweetly creep into his study of imagination. Done by death, by slanderous tongues, was the hero that here lies. And in the spiced Indian air by night, full often has she gossiped by my side. And now from the Midsummer Night's Dream. How came her eyes so bright? Not with salt tears. And these things do best please me, which befall preposterously. And one in all the world's new fashions planted that hath a mint of phrases in his brain. And from the Merchant of Venice, here we sit and let the sounds of music creep in our ears, soft stillness, and the night becomes the touches of sweet harmony. And this our life exempt from public haunts or hants, finds tongues in trees, books in the running brooks, sermons in stones, and good in everything. And from As You Like It, thou, in the youth, thou wert as true a lover as ever signed upon a midnight pillow. If he compact of jaws turn musical, we soon shall hear of discord in the spheres. What fool is this, O worthy fool, one that hath been a courtier? The heathen philosopher, when he had a desire to eat a grape, would open his lips when he put it into his mouth, meaning thereby that grapes were made top eat and lips to open. Oh, hath been tutored in the rudiments of many desperate studies. King Lear, what shall Cordelia do? Love and be silent. Let me, if not by birth, have lands by wit. Sometime I shall sleep out. The rest I'll whistle. Misshapen chaos of well-seeming forms. And Romeo and Juliet. Oh, teach me how I should forget to think. Turning his face to the dew-dropping south. Oh, she doth teach the torches to burn bright. You worship in that sense may call him man. Heaven and yourself had part in the fair maid. Now heaven hath all. I saw her laid low in her kindred's vault. Oh, here will I set up my everlasting rest. So William Shakespeare and Edgar Allan Poe definitely differed in the overall lengths of most of their works. But Edgar Allan Poe and William Shakespeare shared several notable similarities in their writing styles and influences. Both Poe and Shakespeare were masters of using descriptive language to convey specific moods and emotions in their works. They employed controlled patterns of meter with alternating stressed and unstressed syllables, and this was to create a poetic melody. And of course, they both had a strong understanding of the use of rhetorical devices. I think it's especially interesting that in The Mask of the Red Death, the main character is directly named after the character Prospero from Shakespeare's The Tempest. Both Prosperos are isolated rulers who try to shield themselves from the outside world, only to have their seclusion disrupted. However, there are some key differences in writing style, and I'm not just referring to the 300-year difference in language usage and word meaning. While Shakespeare used fewer stanzas in his sonnets and varied his rhyme schemes, Poe tended to use more elaborate stanzaic structures, often with the same rhyme scheme repeated across multiple stanzas, such as poems like The Raven. Additionally, Shakespeare's plays often explored broad, universal themes of human nature, while Poe was more focused on the dark, macabre, and psychological aspects of the human experience. Poe maintained a more ironic, detached relationship to his writings compared to Shakespeare's more autobiographical approach. Despite these differences, Shakespeare's influence on Poe is quite evident. Poe's works, like Shakespeare's, have had a lasting impact on literature and continue to captivate readers with their poetic mastery and exploration of the human condition. Join Celebrate Poe for episode 238. And it looks like we're getting closer to that podcast milestone, episode 250. Now, sources for this episode include Edgar Allan Poe, a critical biography by author Hobson Quinn, The Poe Log, a documentary life of Edgar Allan Poe by Dwight R. Thomas and David K. Jackson, Edgar Allan Poe, The Man by Mary E. Phillips, Edgar Allan Poe by George E. Woodberry from the American Men of Letters series, and The Life of Edgar A. Poe by Eugene L. Didier. Well, thank you very much for making it this far as we take a deep dive into the life, times, and influences of America's Shakespeare and how he has influenced our world. Now, I'd like to end with a version of Nobody Coming to Marry Me. This music was Eliza Poe's big hit on stage. And thank you for listening to Celebrate Poe.